For more than 30 years, ending about 6 months ago, there was at least one gravitational radiation detector collecting data continuously. Most of that time, there was only one gravitational radiation detector collecting data continuously, and it looked like that. Incidentally, I deliberately made no new bluegrass for this talk. These are all authentic ones of bluegrass. The other kind looks like a Maltese cross with masses and mirrors on the ends of the arms and a beam splitter where the body is supposed to be. Now, these were declared historical some time ago. This is the detector that was used at the Argonne National Laboratory in the early days, installed as part of an exhibit in honor of the centenary of the birth of Albert Einstein, and you can remember when that was. The exhibit, of course, is no longer there, but the bar remains as part of their permanent collection. They gold-plated it to make it look nicer. And here is the traditional problem with detecting these things. That is the power you expect from a pair of masses moving around each other. And g over c to the fifth is a very large number. On the other hand, quite magically, if you allow an object to collapse close to its gravitational radius and rotate or orbit close to breakup and rewrite the equations accordingly, suddenly and magically you start picking up powers of C upstairs and powers of G downstairs, and by the time you finish this process, you have the C to the fifth at the top and the G downstairs. And that makes the thing then not totally hopeless. And the early data, this is actually Argonne, Maryland, looked like that, with a statistically significant excess of coincidences between the two detectors when you put no time delay into either data stream. If you put time delays into the data stream, then you went down to the accidentals rate for some particular, probably about 4 days of data. And the first group actually to build the same kind of detector with the same simple structure as the original one worked with under Eduardo Amaldi at Rome. And back in 1980, they remarked that their data, this is detectors in Rome and Frascati, show evidence for an excess of coincidence of above the noise with the 12-hour double sidereal period that were in the Maryland Argonne data. And I heard just the other day from Guido Pizzella that they're running two detectors again and seeing the same thing. This is the correlation between Rome and Maryland, with the Rome authors first and the Maryland authors underneath. And again, the excess of coincidences and the sidereal period. This is the cross-section of a classical bar antenna, calculated first back in the 60s, and finally believed when it was calculated later by people from more prestigious institutions. It's always an issue. And this is the cross-section of a bar antenna if you consider it being made up of small dipoles. That has not been confirmed by anybody at a prestigious institution, therefore does not believe. And then, over here, then there was a supernova. Yes. And at the time supernova 1987A went off, there were actually three antennas collecting data, two in Maryland and one in Rome. And this is the analysis of the Maryland-Rome data during 1987A, correlated in time with a subset of the particle detectors. They eventually succeeded in getting data from all of the particle detectors. Freyus, Mont Blanc, Kamioka, Baksan, IMB, and I'm forgetting the name of at least one other. Turned out that IMB was the hardest to get, where IMB, of course, is Irvine, Michigan, Brookhaven. And it's one of those things, there's a classic phrase that says, a prophet is not without honor, save in his own country. How many of you know what that came from? That's very interesting. We do not read Bible as literature. It's biblical, yeah. And with the gravitational detectors and the particle detectors, this isn't a cross-correlation function. This is the Mount Blanc one with Maryland and Rome separately offset, so you can see the two separately. And the next one is going to be that same thing for spray use. Previously, it was not locked. There's spray use. That's done both as a product correlation function and as a sum correlation function. With, again, the peak. This, in effect, is upside down from the previous sort of data. But with the peak at very close to, though not, notice not quite zero time delay. It's about a 0.6 second time delay between the gravitational radiation detectors and the particle detectors. And here it is for the whole assemblage. And there, that's simply the cross-correlation over a period of several hours centered around the supernova. And there's Frege's Kamioka and Mount Blanc, and the IMB and the Baksan, all look rather similar. And here we have, for those of you who like this sort of data, here we have a Lamb-Scargill periodogram of Maryland, Roman, Kamioka, with, again, a modest time offset from zero. If you were to take this seriously, you'd say, well, okay, the neutrinos had to work their way out. The gravitons came without having to work their way out. The next thing that happened was the launch of the Compton Gamma Ray Observatory. Do I have this right side up? Yes. This is a BATSE trigger. BATSE is the burst and transient source experiment. This is the thing on the Compton Gamma Ray Observatory that saw gamma ray bursts, right up until the time they lowered it into the ocean. And this is, in fact, a totally typical average BATSE event. There's a trigger that dings when the event rate increases sufficiently rapidly. On this one, undoubtedly, the trigger time was zero, by definition. Notice that if you'd had a more distant event, this would still have triggered, but it would have triggered roughly 10 seconds later when you cross that count rate level. So BATSE trigger times have a certain degree of inherent temporal uncertainty. Nevertheless, with much pain and quarreling over who would do the work, since by now there was no money for graduate students and things, there began to turn up correlations between the gravity wave antenna data and BATSE trigger times. And I have like three of them. They're simply three totally random BATSE trigger times plotted on gravitational radiation detector output. I inherited something like 400 Xerox size boxes of data like this. Not all on overheads, most of it was paper, but I grabbed a handful of the overheads. There's one. It's close to, but not exactly the same time as the strongest pulse on the overheads. On the gravitational radiation data, there's another event similarly. And one more. One is a discovery, two is a confirmation, three is a well-known sort class of astrophysical source, so there's a third one. And again, the GRB trigger time is close to the maximum output of the gravity wave antenna during that period. I accidentally brought a fourth one. Oh, for a good reason, because it isn't always the biggest event in that several hours of data. That one is the second biggest event. And in due course, those data were published in a journal that I suspect very few of you read. The data were published in Nuovo Cimento, which is a publication of the Italian Physical Society. And then along came the bursting pulsar, a neutron star, X-ray binary near the galactic center, that exhibited both gamma ray burst type structure and rotationally timed pulsation. And there the coincidence rate went up still higher. And this is a table of the events, not the first year that the bursting pulsar was on, but the second year when the data became generally available to the public. Data availability is always an issue, and the guys who built the experiment, of course, are entitled to get all the goodies out first. It's only fair. But with, what is that, December 96 to February 97, it's actually 2 months of data, and about a dozen of the BATSE triggers from the bursting pulsar within the time resolution at the same time as the maximum output on that day's gravitational radiation data. And that paper was rejected even by Nuovo Cimento, and was finally accepted by Physics Essays, and there is the letter of acceptance. The proofs came after. It was too late for the author to read them. I corrected the proofs, and this is now in press. And the last data tape ran out about the time Joe died. We did finish on time. You understand this did not translate into any funding for his experiments.
And he also is interesting for a variety of reasons, and that's other things.
Oh, the papers are being archived at Maryland, if that's what you're asking. His scientific, the books, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books. He bought books the way I buy jewelry. Actually, that isn't true. He bought the jewelry for me, but he bought books. He only had a couple of weaknesses. He had expensive tastes in books and in women, and that was about it. He bought cheap cars. The books are going to the Niels Bohr Library, and I've got about half of them there. The scientific papers are being archived in Maryland Manuscripts and Archives at Hornbeck Library, and I did the best I could. You know, I said there were several hundred Xerox box sizes things in Maryland in the house that all had to be cleared out, and I went through them all and did the best I could. Stuff from his office at Maryland has been archived. There's as much again in his office and in storerooms in California, and I'm going through it, and papers are being archived. Some of the things, a lot of the material on the company that he was involved in to do commercial exploitation of masers and lasers back before anybody else knew that these were going to work. Unfortunately, the rats and mice and raccoons got into some of those papers, and they weren't all retrievable. The stuff from company was called General Laser back in 1965, and they weren't all retrievable, but most of them are being archived. Well, they were told by John Toll that they had to do this, and John Toll was president of the University of Maryland for many years. He was the first modern chair of the physics department. He was the first chair of the Maryland physics department who knew quantum mechanics. And he simply told the library, you must archive these papers. And several of the historians of science in the Washington area, Spencer Wirt and David Dvorkin and others, said, well, these papers must be archived, even if they're a mess.
So then my second question really far
It would be foolish not to look for correlations, I think. And if it's found by somebody at a prestigious institution, it will be believed.